Hello, hello, hello. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Y'all know who it is. Brandon Burroughs, a.k.a. Yasha the Beast, bringing you all the NBA news from NBA Clutch Time, hosted by the Playmakers Radio. And as I always say, we're going to get right into it. First things first, I'm going to address the L.A. Clippers. I am extremely disappointed in the L.A. Clippers. I am very disappointed in Paul George. Not for the entirety of this series, but for when it counted on a couple of games. Paul George did not show up. I am extremely disappointed in Doc Rivers for the simple fact of this is the third time he's blown a 3-1 lead. He's had Tracy McGrady, Chris Paul, Blake Griffin, Kawhi Leonard, Paul George. How many players do you need to keep a 3-1 lead, Doc? How many? What the hell? Those are like the most 3-1 blows for a coach in NBA history now? This is ridiculous, man. You should have played Montrezl Harrell more. I am very disappointed in one named Patrick Beverley. Mr. All-NBA defensive team, too. I am partially disappointed in Kawhi Leonard. To me, Kawhi takes the least amount of blame, and it's because he's had one bad game this series, and it was the Game 7. Now, granted, that was the most crucial game. However, that's based off of perception. Now, in my opinion, all the games were crucial when they were up 3-1. Kawhi did great in Game 5. Kawhi did really good in Game 6. Kawhi ran out of gas in Game 7. Shot horrible, 6-for-22. Played some good defense, but that was basically it. He could not take over the way we are used to Kawhi Leonard taking over. And it was a sight, man. But the fact of the matter is, you know, when they were up 3-1, Kawhi had two really good back-to-back games. The Clippers didn't rally around him. And the things that should have been done did not get done. Patrick Beverley, you know, to say that he's this elite defensive point guard, Jamal Murray went off for that 40-point game, and it's not like Patrick Beverley did that great this series to begin with on defense. He did good. He didn't do great. I'm starting to understand why people think Marcus Smart is the better defender at this point, but I just think Marcus Smart has more stamina than Patrick Beverley does. Another thing is just the simple fact of Montrezl Harrell should have had more minutes, and you know, that's just that. Trez should have had more minutes. When they finally gave him a 25-minute game, which was Game 7, he shot 7-for-10. He dropped 20 points. He only had 3 rebounds, and that was kind of disappointing, but he only played 25 minutes. You know, it's not like he's, on average, a straight-up 10-rebound-per-game guy. So, you know, on that note, it is what it is. But he should have played more this series. You needed his aggressiveness on defense, especially on Nikola Jokic. And Doc did not give him the minutes that he should have played. Granted, I know he's not in tip-top shape, but the thing about it is you don't need him to be in tip-top basketball shape and be on his prowess the whole entire time. Offensively, you need his defense. That's what you needed from Montrezl Harrell. You needed his defense. And for the fact that this goes to prove, like, this proves what I said about Doc the whole entire time. I've always been one to say Doc is not one of the best coaches in the league. Doc was one of the most luckiest coaches in the league. And day by day, this is proving me right. Year by year, this is proving me right. The fact of the matter is when he won that championship 12 years ago, because everybody, he got his ring. Celtics beat the Lakers. Well, Andrew Bynum was injured, and that was 12 damn years ago. What has he done since then? He made the finals with the same exact team 2 years later. And he lost. After that Boston team, when he didn't have that big three anymore, what did Doc Rivers do? He's never even made a conference finals ever again, despite having DeAndre Jordan at his defensive peak, despite having Blake Griffin at his offensive peak, despite having Chris Paul at his IQ peak, despite having J.J. Redick at his shooting peak. Like, he's never made another conference finals, and he blew 2-3-1 leads in the playoffs on the Clippers. Please stop calling this man this great coach. He's not. He's not. Like, please stop. He doesn't deserve it. He had a great team. He had Kevin Garnett, one of the best defensive players ever. He had Paul Pierce, one of the most clutch players ever. He had Ray Allen, one of the best shooters ever. He had Rondo, one of the best passers ever. He did not have to do that much as a coach. He didn't. God damn. Please stop hyping this man up. He doesn't make adjustments. He does not adjust to different play styles in the same series. That's why he never makes conference finals anymore. He can't do it. At this point, I can coach better than Doc Rivers can. I wouldn't have blown that lead. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, I just really had to get that off my chest real quick. You know, that was a very frustrating thing to watch. I was somebody who had the Clippers going to the conference finals. I was one of those people who wanted to see the Clippers versus Lakers. I wanted to see the battle for LA. Now LeBron James is most likely going back to the finals. And, you know, this is what I've said about LeBron time and time again. He's been one of the luckiest postseason superstars ever. And it's not in the terms of he hasn't shown up when he's needed to in the postseason. Of course, we're not talking about the NBA Finals, but the road to the Finals almost every year has been easy for LeBron James. Right? Then he goes to the West, and lo and behold, he's the only player, or he's on the team that faces a losing Western Conference playoff team, which is the Portland Trail Blazers. He has a knack for that lucky charm of going against losing teams in the first round, or, you know, teams that are not very good, having like 42 wins, 43 wins, maybe 44. The highest wins that he's ever faced against in the first round was the Pacers, 48 wins, which was Oladipo just 2 years ago. I don't hold LeBron accountable for that. That's not LeBron's fault. I'm just saying luck has its way with LeBron. And LeBron has his way with luck. When he was in the East, you know, during he and Wade's prime, prior to them teaming up, he's never had to face Wade in the playoffs. You know, he's never had to face the best Eastern Conference player in the playoffs. He's never had to face Giannis in the playoffs, or the second best, at least, because we know usually he is the best. He's never had to face Giannis. He's never had to face, like I said, Dwayne Wade when Dwayne Wade was at his peak. he just, you know, when you look at the second and third best players in the East, he's never really had to face them, other than when he went against Boston and, you know, he went against, because nobody on that Celtics team was better than Dwayne Wade. Celtics had a better team than Wade did, but nobody on that Celtics team has been better than Dwayne Wade, At least not around that time. So, yeah. And now he's in the West. He's going to the conference finals. But he didn't have to face Kawhi Leonard. He didn't have to face Luka Doncic. He didn't have to, like, he didn't have to face those guys. Granted, he did face James Harden. Right, but I personally felt like Luka and Kawhi are better than James Harden. James Harden is an offensively gifted player, especially when it comes down to getting to the free throw line. But I feel like James Harden is overrated. You know, a lot of people say, oh, you know, look at his shooting and all this other stuff. Well, it shouldn't be hard to make the most or second most or third most threes, you know, in a year, if you take the most threes. Like, goddamn, he's the only person who shoots more than Steph Curry does. So when you shoot that much, you know, and you're only averaging like 35% from the three-point line, kind of raises an eyebrow. Because when Steph shoots that much, Steph averages about 43% from the three-point line. To me, James Harden is just overrated. His defense has gotten a little better, but it's still not, you know, that great. But that's not to take away what LeBron did when he eliminated them, you know, him and Anthony Davis. But that Houston Rockets team was just, that was stupid. They didn't have any 7-footers. I think their tallest guy was Robert Covington at 6'8". Like, I mean, come on. Like, your tallest guy is as tall as LeBron. Or maybe about a half inch shorter than LeBron. Lakers could kill you any which way. On top of that, Westbrook wasn't fully healthy, nor was he fully, you know, there in terms of, you know, what he was doing on the floor. Even Harden's series against OKC, you know, when it was Harden versus Chris Paul, that showed me right there how overrated Harden is. At least postseason Harden. But, you know, that is, like I said, that's sometimes the luck that LeBron James has. I wish it was LeBron that had to play Dallas in the first round. Not saying that I wish Kawhi went against Portland. I would rather see Kawhi versus Donovan Mitchell with Clippers in Utah. That would have been my first round matchup. No, that I wanted to see that for the second round. That's my dream second round matchup of this year. That's what I wanted to happen. I wanted Kawhi versus Donovan Mitchell. Unfortunately, that did not happen. Nikola Jokic has been crazy this postseason. He's shown up when he needed to show up. And whenever Jamal Murray gets locked up, Jokic just takes over like it's nothing. Whenever Jokic is getting locked up, Jamal Murray just takes over like it's nothing. Those two are a very good duo. And I feel like they might have their 2011 Dallas Mavericks season that Dirk and Terry had. I feel like Jokic and Terry just might have it this year. I'm not going to bet on it. But I wouldn't be surprised if it happened, in all honesty. Because it just seems like those two are on a mission. And it's destruct and destroy. That's really what it's just starting to look like. I feel like the only way that they can beat the Lakers is if they take advantage of the lack of three-point shooting that happens with that team. LeBron's not a great three-point shooter. Danny Green has been absent-minded from the three-point line more than a few times. Rondo's had a couple of good shooting games, but come on, is that something we're really going to rely on? Contavious, Caldwell Pope, let's be serious. No, J.R. Smith's not going to get the playing time. that's what you got to take advantage of. Lack of three-point shooting on the Lakers. Because we all know LeBron James is a kicker. You know, like, he'll drive to the basket, he'll kick it out to whoever's at the three-point line, and as long as you guard them the right way, allow them to take the shot, but don't allow them to take the perfect shot. you can find a lot of success and have a great possibility of beating the Lakers. We all know that they're going to go big and they're going to get aggressive with Jokic. That's no surprise. It's already been announced that they're going to be reactivating Dwight Howard and JaVale McGee. But I think, for what it's worth, this could be a good series. Just as long as Denver just keeps doing what they're doing. First team in NBA history to make 2-3-1 comebacks in the same postseason. So that in itself is beyond amazing. You know, we are witnessing history. And I really just want to see what is what's going to happen in the West from here. And we are going to take a very short break. And when we do return, I'm going to get into the Eastern Conference. Say hello to Jimmy Butler. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, and we are back. You know, as I said, we are going to talk about the Eastern Conference, and I'm going to do just that. Now, before getting into what's going on in the current series of Boston versus Miami, what I do also want to do is take a moment to look at the East for what it is, right? Miami has been very dominant this postseason. They've only lost one game, and that was against the Bucks. Oddly enough, it was the Bucks when Giannis got injured and could not finish the game, right? He had 19 points in 11 minutes. Crazy thing about that stat is that only one person passed that 19-point mark when they won. That was Chris Middleton. He had a very exceptional game, by the way. But nonetheless, seeing the Miami Heat, the Milwaukee Bucks, the Boston Celtics, and the Toronto Raptors play was very interesting. It wasn't very interesting for Philadelphia, but just because they were dealing with injuries, you know, so on and so forth. But those four teams in particular, it was very interesting to see them play. It was very interesting to see this year and last year how the East plays when LeBron James is no longer there. And it actually looks to be a bit more interesting. You know, the problem with the East right now is that there's not enough leaders in the East. And when I say that, it's, you don't have enough Jimmy Butlers, right? Like, you have Pascal Siakam and Kyle Lowry, who are, you know, Kyle Lowry is the leader of the Raptors, but he's not a leader's leader. He can't, you know, step up, when needed to, on all ways of the ball, right? Like, he's great with intangibles, like drawing fouls and, you know, taking charge for offensive fouls, double teaming. Like, he's great for intangibles, but so is Jimmy Butler. And Jimmy Butler can also take over a game. And I think that's what more teams in the East need. They need players who can take over the games. Like, the Boston Celtics they don't really have a straight up leader of that team. Like, who is it? Is it Jaylen Brown? Is it Jason Tatum? Is it Kemba Walker? Like, there's a couple of people on that team. It's just like, you don't know who the clear-cut leader is. You know who the best player is, but you don't know who the leader is. And that's a big difference. Like Jimmy Butler, he's not the highest scorer technically on the Miami Heat, but he's the leader of the Heat. He commands with an iron fist, especially in late-game situations, and he takes the game over and makes it his. And the East just needs more of that. Like, you know, the Dallas Mavericks have Luka Doncic, who can do that. The Clippers have Kawhi Leonard, who can do that. Although they did not rally around him the way that they should have, they still have somebody who can do it. The Lakers have LeBron, who can do that, and Anthony Davis, who can do that. So teams in the West have that. You know, Denver has Jokic and Murray, who can both do that. Utah Jazz has Donovan Mitchell, who's done a great job of doing that. And it just, you know, they just didn't rally around him enough as well.
But you see leaders in the West who can do that. You don't really see a lot of leaders in the East that can do that. And that's a big part in why when LeBron was in the East, he had such a dominant role of getting to the finals much more often than not, because he was the only leader in the East. You know, after Dwayne Wade's prime was starting to go away. I mean, Wade bounced back pretty good in 2016, him and Chris Bosh. You know, when it was, oh, you know, they can't do anything without LeBron. And then they were one game away from the conference finals. You know, Chris Bosh, of course, couldn't play for the later part of the season in the postseason because of the blood clots, unfortunately. Then Hassan Whiteside got injured. I believe it was like game six against Toronto. And there was just, you know, a lot of things that ended up happening, unfortunately. But you saw one hell of a bounce back. That it took away from the whole, oh, you know, LeBron can't, or this team can't function without LeBron, and that can't happen. It showed how good of a coach Eric Spoelstra is. It showed how good of a leader Dwayne Wade is. It showed how good of a support role Chris Bosh is. It showed how good of a defender Hassan Whiteside is on the interior. So all in all, like I said, there's just not enough leadership that is happening in the East that is happening in the West. Now, back to the East and going into this conference finals, which Miami is up 2-0. This series is extremely interesting, but the reason why is because both times Miami has made the necessary comebacks to win these games. Jimmy Butler is extremely crucial in the fourth quarter. You know, leads have been swinging back and forth. Both teams have been going on exceptional runs. But when it counts, Jimmy Butler takes over. And it's crazy because it's just like when you look at every aspect of the game almost, except for turnovers, Boston won. Like they won in rebounds and, you know, they won in most defensive categories, as a matter of fact, I believe. I think they edged him out by like, you know, a couple of assists as well. And it's just like, how in the world did they lose the game? Well, it was because of turnovers. It was like 9-20 in terms of turnovers that game, that last game. And, Goran Dragic has been playing amazing. You know, I've seen Goran Dragic play amazing, you know, since 2016. As where last year was all about, you know, Wade's going away thing. And although they were trying to make the playoffs, I think they were also trying to just have a very good Wade year. A great goodbye for Dwayne Wade as well. It was much better than what the Lakers had when, you know, they were the whole Kobe thing. Sorry, I get kind of choked up when talking about him at times. Rest in peace to the Black Mamba. But the whole retirement tour for Kobe Bryant, it was very inspiring to a lot of younger players. It was very heartfelt to a lot of the older players. And it was very connected in between the media, the players, the coaches, the personnel, everybody. That was the best retirement tour that I've ever seen. I mean, granted, let's use it for, that was the best retirement year I've ever seen. And it was just from an emotional value and standpoint. Especially with the fact that Kobe went out with a bang, that 60 point game, you know, people recorded me crying. you know, when he got that 60th point, as a matter of fact, my sister was actually recording me crying throughout most of the fourth quarter. I got to see a vintage Kobe Bryant that I knew was still there, but was very dormant to try and avoid injuries during his final season. Once he knew that that was going to be it, he was just like, okay, I at least got to be healthy enough to say goodbye to everybody. And it was such a beautiful gesture from the league and from the Lakers to give him that type of goodbye. But he definitely followed up on it big time. And he went out and, you know, he gave us the best performance in a retirement game that we could ever see. It was amazing. We all saw how Jordan went out originally when he first retired, you know, from the Bulls. He went out with a ring, and that was amazing. But then he came back, and that kind of, it didn't take away from what he did, but it tarnished it a little bit because, you know, he was supposed to stay gone. But he came back for a good reason. He donated his salary to the cause of helping people out during 9/11. You know, that was an amazing thing that Jordan did, and I'll never take away from him. There are analysts that sit back and they trash him for, you know, his Wizard years and not making the playoffs during his Wizard years and all this other stuff. And it's like, well, first up, Jordan was shaking hands with 40. And second up, he wasn't in it to win it. He was in it to help gather funds for those who were devastated from the 9/11 tragedy. And Michael Jordan became even more of a hero to those who knew what he was doing it for. And to MJ, my hat's off to you. Another great retirement game was Dwayne Wade, how he went out. You know, he went out with a triple-double. And, you know, that game was very amazing because it still showed Wade has fight. But he's just not, his body isn't there anymore, right? It was the Kobe thing. His body just wasn't there anymore. But mentally, he could still fight with the best of them. He could still, you know, will his team to victory in many different ways, shapes, and forms. Miami was very close to making the playoffs, got cut short, and that's okay. But Wade went down, and he went down swinging. You know, so that was an amazing retirement game. But I think the game that was even better than that retirement game was actually the game that he went against LeBron James. You know, and I believe he had like a 15-10 game against LeBron. And, you know, LeBron came out and guarded Wade on that last shot. Wade tried to get it up over LeBron, and it didn't happen that way. But to see that last play, was one of the most significant plays of Wade's career. And it was not a successful play, but it was a very important one. And it was a sentimental value that was on that play. LeBron guarded Wade. Wade went for the shot. You know, LeBron was just all up in his jersey. The shot was nowhere near where it needed to be, clearly. But nonetheless, you know, you saw as soon as Wade let go of the ball, and, you know, they both looked at it and then realized it wasn't going anywhere near the rim. LeBron just embraced Wade right then and there as the ball was still coming down. You know, the big I love you hug, you know, big brotherly hug. Clearly, you know, Wade is the older of the two, but LeBron's the bigger of the two. But that was a beautiful moment, a very beautiful moment. But at any rate, that was the NBA losing a lot of its leaders, you know. And Jimmy Butler being the leader that he is. And let's talk about Jimmy Butler's leadership for a second, right? Jimmy Butler as a leader, let's talk about some of the things that he did, right? So, what was it, 2017? He brought the Bulls back into the playoffs, right? 2018, he brings the Minnesota Timberwolves to the playoffs for the first time in like 13 years. Then last year, he takes Philly as far as they went for X amount of years. Actually, I think since Iverson being in Philly, you know, 19 years ago, in the finals. You know, he took them to their deepest playoff run since Iverson. And now he's taking a Miami Heat team that did not make the playoffs last year. And he's taking them potentially to the NBA Finals. And it doesn't look like Boston's going to be able to stop them. But the reason why is because, like I said, Boston doesn't have... They have a scrapper. They have scrappers. We know they have hustle players. Jimmy Butler is more than a hustle player. He's a hustle player with great defense, IQ, and can score and can lead his team. Like, he can tell people what's about to happen so that they pick up on it as the ball handler is still coming down the court. And then if he sees that a double team needs to happen, he'll jump right into the lane and take the ball right from whoever the primary ball handler is. And then, like, just run the other way with it. And then you're not going to be able to stop him unless you foul him. And he can hit free throws. He's a very intangible leader who can take over the games with tangibles as well. So if you need him to put up the stats, he does it. If you don't need him to put up the stats and you need him for, you know, the moral support role, he can also do that too. And that's the thing about Jimmy Butler that makes him so dangerous. It's like the first half of games, he literally just sits back and says, okay, let's see what my team needs, right? And then the second half, he just goes out there and does it. Like, what he's able to do is crazy. And I have not seen another player be able to do something like that. Other than Kobe Bryant and LeBron James. And I'm going to take Kobe away because I'm talking strictly Eastern Conference. So since LeBron James, and you all know what? I'm sorry, Kawhi was in the East last year. Kawhi Leonard. But prior to those two, it was just Dwayne Wade, right? And that was back in like 06. Granted, like, he's been a great leader, but he wasn't healthy enough, you know, throughout quite a bit of his career to actually show people what he is still capable of doing. And in times where he was healthy, some other teammates that were crucial to his team and the play style of the team and their roles were not that healthy. So, you know, it's been a string of, oh man, you know, luck hasn't always been on Wade's side. Sometimes it was. But Wade was also a great leader. Part of being a great leader is also knowing when somebody else has to be the better player on the court for X amount of time. And Wade was very good with that. And Jimmy Butler is very good with that. Like, Butler doesn't go out there and he has to be the best statistical player on the floor. Butler can go out there and give you 14, like he did last game, and still win. And take over a game while only scoring like 14, 15 points. That's the amazing thing about Jimmy Butler. He can do something like that. But Dwayne Wade was also a player who could do something like that. He was like, okay, look, Bron, we can't be two Batmans on this team, right? You have the better physical stature than I do. Go out there and be who you are, right? Like, from the ball perspective, this is now your team. You can now be the ball dominant player. And then, boom, Miami took off that next season. Because Wade knew what had to be done. He's like, look, IQ-wise, I'm still the guy, right? Rallying the team, I'm still the guy. Locker room, I'm still the guy. But when it comes down to who needs the ball in their hands, here, take it. It's you. And that's part of being a leader. You know, not every leader sees leadership in just having the ball. And like I said, like, that's what we're seeing with Jimmy Butler. He does it with Goran Dragic and Bam Adebayo, and even at times Tyler Herro. And with seeing something like that, it's just like, okay, well, Boston doesn't have that. Everybody still is like, no, I got to get mine. I still got to get mine. And there's no clear cut, okay, I'm the smartest guy on the team. The team has to rally around me. Even if I don't have the ball, we can get the ball in somebody else's hands. I'm the commander. The Boston Celtics don't have a general. They don't have a commander. You know, there's not a brains of the operation on the floor. There's a great brain behind the coach, of course. But Brad Stevens isn't on the floor. And Miami has that. And that immediately puts Miami at a major advantage. It's like literally going to war and your army has a commander and a general and theirs doesn't. Like, you're fighting a bunch of privates and lieutenants. Or going to, you know, even if you go to a store, right? Imagine going to a grocery store that has no general manager. Yeah, that'd be a major issue. Major issue. But I don't see a sweep happening. I honestly think Boston's going to win the next game. Then Miami's just going to either take it in 5 or take it in 6. I don't see us going to 7 games. I say Miami in 5 or Miami in 6. But I do definitely see Boston taking at least one game from them. And I think that game's going to be the next game. Possibly the next 2. But I honestly see the next 1. And then Miami just taking it back. Like how they did with Milwaukee. even though that was, what, game 4 that Milwaukee took, I believe. But nonetheless, they still got their game. Gentlemen's sweep, not really a sweep, but at the same time, you know how the rules kind of go with this. Nonetheless, we got Lakers in Denver, and like I said before, it's going to be a good series. No, I talked about it in an earlier segment. So we got Lakers in Denver that hasn't even started yet, technically. And we have Boston and Miami that are already 2 games into their series. And Miami's just looking unbeatable right now. Right? Like, Denver's looking like the miracle team. Lakers are looking like the well-rounded team. Miami's looking like the unbeatable team. That's what scares me. That Miami's looking like the unbeatable team. And then, like, Boston just looks like the team with the most potential. But the playoffs have been very interesting. I'm not dissatisfied with the playoffs, but I'm not fully satisfied with the playoffs either. Of course, there's, you know, people that have not been at 100%. Both mentally and physically. Certain players did not want to come to the bubble. Certain teams that I honestly think should have made the playoffs did not make the playoffs. Prime example, Phoenix Suns went undefeated in the bubble, still didn't make the playoffs. And I was just like, why bring Phoenix to the playoff? Or why bring Phoenix to the bubble if they can go undefeated and still not make it? Like, if like that's literally a situation where it's just like, well, then why in the hell did you bring us? We could literally be perfect and still not make the playoffs. I thought Phoenix should have made it over Portland. Portland lost a couple games. Granted, they ended up with a better record, but you only gave them 8 games to work with, and Phoenix didn't lose one of them. That's just my opinion, but we know how the record goes. Because we know how the record shows. At any rate, this has been, like I said, a very interesting season. The playoffs are just as interesting as the season was. And I can't wait to see how things turn out. I got Lakers in 6 over Nuggets. Like I said, I got Miami in either 5 or 6. However, if the Nuggets were to beat the Lakers, it would not surprise me as much as it would other people. It's because they just came back from 2-3-1 deficits. You don't make those type of comebacks to not finalize what you have been selling. You know, you don't go to sell a car and then not bring the paperwork to finalize the deal. So if it was to happen, I'm not surprised, because these guys are hungry. They are hungry. And the chemistry is there. But until the next episode, I will talk with you guys later. Everybody stay safe. Please, everybody, please stay out of trouble. Much respect to the protesters of the Black Lives Matter movement, that are going out there and speaking on behalf of those of the voiceless and those who have been deceased by the hands of crooked cops out there. Much love and much respect to you. And understood that you are definitely appreciated. We all know that Black Lives Matter. And I appreciate the message, as well as I have been sending a message of my own. As some people know, I had released a track a couple months ago. It was called No Justice, No Peace. And I did exactly what I set out to do on that track. But at any rate, this is something that a lot of people have been addressing the right way. Some people haven't been going about it the right way, but there are also people out there, you know, saying, oh, you know, well, all lives matter and blue lives matter. Well, this is my question. If your response to Black Lives Matter is all lives matter, then how come that's not your response when people say blue lives matter? It's because you're afraid of the word black. That's all it is. And we know what type of people you are. And this will not offend those who are not under that category of person. For those who are not racist, for those who are not going out to dismantle the message of Black Lives Matter. Because they're not saying only Black Lives Matter. That's not what we're saying. We're not saying Black Lives Matter more than white lives. Is Black Lives Matters in terms of all lives can't matter until ours matters too. So you got to include us in there. And until you learn how to do that, you'll always be against us. And we'll always know who you are. It's that simple. I want everybody to have a nice night, have a nice week. Rest up, and please mentally prepare yourself for all of your life's journey ahead of you. And I know sometimes that is very hard, but understand that it definitely can be done with the right forms of just finding your inner peace, a little bit of meditation, or any alternative methods that you might have. Meditation is not just sitting pretzel legs, you know, with tong hands. And saying om with candles lit. That's not what meditation is. That's an ancient form of meditation. However, that is not the end all be all. Meditation is just finding a mental state of peace. But please, everybody, like I said, please stay safe. Try your best to stay out of trouble. And just make sure that you are being the best you that you can be. Until next time, you all have a good night.